Good grief. Question everything. Why?
Welcome. You're listening to Why, a Good Grief Network podcast with Amy Lewis Rowe and Laura Schmidt.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Why, a Good Grief Network podcast. Today, we'd like to dig into the 10-step program that Amy and I have created over the past few years. We are going to explain each step, and we'll also explain our plans for the future.
We'd like to say a special thanks to our donors. We're very fortunate to have a lot of people supporting us. It's getting harder and harder to thank everyone by name, which is a wonderful problem to have. But this week we have a special thanks for Brian and Kathy, Patrick, Dick and Marsha, Brooke, Leah, Brendel, Kindy, Laura, Mary, and the Story family. Special thanks to Amy and Ray and Katie for their past support. So Laura, you started this program by yourself when you were working on your thesis, and it was originally 9 steps. Do you want to talk about that and then the transformation of how we switched to 10 and how we've still been adjusting those 10 a bit?
Yeah, for sure. So as Amy mentioned, I worked on this project in my graduate program at the University of Utah. It was in the environmental humanities, and I created 9 steps, largely based off of my experience with Al-Anon, or more specifically, adult children of alcoholics. And I realized the healing that can take place inside those rooms and among people from person to person. And I also understood the importance of ritual, you know, showing up and always hearing the same intro, always hearing the same closing, and then just the content in the middle is different. And so I figured that for folks who are in denial or feeling despair over climate issues or systemic issues more generally, that we can actually create a program like this. But the outcome is a little bit different. The subject matter is a little bit different, but it's still remaining true to the same point of building community and having a bit of ritual and coming together to feel like you can have a safe place to talk about your feelings and your experiences and your knowledge and your fears, which is huge. You need to have a place to experience all of those or to feel safe to talk about them. So what I did was I interviewed a bunch of scientists, authors, activists, and figured out ways that they sustain themselves. And I found patterns and I put them together. And then I also put in information about what I needed to be as engaged as I can be. That resulted in 9 steps. I sat on that for a little while because it was just theory, right? Like I hadn't put it into practice. And so after Amy moved to Salt Lake City and we started exploring how the world seems to be getting worse and worse, or at least more destructive by the day, we see systems failing us in every aspect of our culture. So Amy and I decided to put the 9 steps into practice, and we did a pilot program where we ran through the 9 steps, 1 a week, and finished it out. And this was housed by our friend Allie. So thank you, Allie, for housing and supporting our first pilot program. After we completed the pilot program, we sat down with the people who participated and asked how we can strengthen the program. And this resulted in a lot of conversations between me and Amy, realizing we needed a 10th step. We don't want to go to 12 like AA or Al-Anon has. We're content at about 10, and we'll explain that in a second. We also ran through a second pilot program, and this was housed by Bridget and Brian, and we met at their house weekly for 10 weeks with the new 10th step. We did the same thing where we had a download after we finished the session. We're not strictly committed to these 10 steps in the way that they are. What we want to do is remain nimble enough for the things that we'll be facing in the future and also the feelings that we're facing now. So what we're going to do is talk about our 10 steps. We're going to lead you through them. What we want to do is release our manual into the world. We're going to give it to anybody who wants to use it to start a branch of the Good Grief Network where they are. We've had people from all over the country, British Columbia, and someone in Wales has reached out to us wanting to start a program of ours. So now Amy and I feel like with this time we've been allotted in Scott's Bluff, we can release the manual in the coming weeks. And it will be imperfect. It will be fluid. And we're hoping that the community impacted by big systemic issues such as climate change or racial injustice or just inequality in general will have a place to gather and build community. And we can actually make this into a network where we touch base and continue to make the manual and the steps as good as they can be, as positive as they can be.
Well, and some of what's been a struggle is my background is in creative writing. I have a Master of Fine Arts in creative nonfiction. And with writing for literary purposes, you start to obsess on it being what you view as perfect. And although it never will be perfect, you treat it as a work of art. So I've been overly picky about how we publish this manual, how we write about it. And what we're starting to realize is this isn't just a work of art. It's about much more than that. And the way things are going, we need to get it out sooner rather than later. And so it's not helpful to sit here and try to perfect the program when we could be releasing these resources to share with others who can then further develop the program and add what works well for them. We can start to collaborate with groups. So basically, we're trying to have faith in these steps despite any imperfection, and we continue to change them slightly. Even just right before we started recording this, we were adjusting one of the steps, and that may continue. And so I'm working on being okay with that, being okay with imperfection, because I believe in the final result of these steps and what they do, rather than how people are going to think of me based on. And I guess it stops being about me and more about the steps and my faith in them to help transform individuals. I believe the steps help with personal transformation as well as fostering community empowerment. I've recently decided that the steps are partners, and so each step has a grouping. So the first two steps fall into the systemic category. Number one is very similar to any 12-step program, and that's accept the problem and its severity. Number two is acknowledging that I'm part of the problem and the solution. And two, clarify, when we say acknowledge my part in the problem and the solution, there's a reason for that, and that's because we all are in these systems, whether we want to be or not. For instance, someone might say, well, you're fighting for clean air, but you drove your van here today. That is when understanding shame. And that is true, we are a part of the problem, but we also are living in a system that kind of requires this kind of thing.
By existing in this Western world, we are forced into systems that even if we don't want to be a part of, we have to. You know, in order for Amy and me to do certain things, we have to emit carbon. And it makes it easier to not feel shame about these decisions. You know you're a part of the system, and that's okay. We're using the tools that the system has provided in order to co-create a better world.
These initial two steps fall into the systemic category because they are bigger than your individual life. It is grief beyond your personal life that has brought you here to the group and with a desire to work through some of this grief.
Step three and four have to do with an element of surrender. Step three is about practicing sitting with uncertainty. And step four is confronting my own mortality and the mortality of all. Again, this has to do with surrender. It has to do with the idea that no matter how much we perceive that we're in control, we're not. There are elements of our life that we cannot control, including death and uncertainty. And, you know, you can be the safest person in the world, you can take all the precautions you want, and you can still get sick, you can still get into a car accident, you can still have some freak accident. So these two steps are really trying to focus the person on realizing that we're not all powerful and in control of our outcomes. And with that, allows us to be more flexible and nimble and respond to challenges as they arise instead of being overly rigid.
And the part about confronting our own mortality and the mortality of all is a step that was added from the original 9-step program. It's where the 10th step comes from. And that's because when you start studying death anxiety, you realize death anxiety is much more complicated than a literal fear of death. It's relates to our need for control, our need to have something that people will remember us by. So death anxiety is about much more than just a literal fear of death. It's what causes us to create other, meaning a disconnection that allows us to dehumanize or disconnect from other beings. And when we disconnect or other a population, it's much easier to do harm. It hurts to hurt living beings that you're connected to.
Well, and then it also hurts to destroy, you know, the rivers and the mountains once you realize how beautiful they are and how connected we are to them. As you mentioned, it's painful. It's a painful experience when we realize that we've created this disconnection. Steps 3 and 4 are trying to make us aware of almost how easy it is to other and become disconnected and to maintain the illusion that we have some sort of control over our current lives or futures.
Right. And I think some people think of surrender as giving up, but there's actually a lot of power that comes from admitting your human limitations, because only when we're able to look at our human limitations are we able to accurately see our strengths. So our next group of steps 5 and 6 is shadow work related. Step 5 is do inner work. This is sort of a checkpoint, because when you're going through the steps that lead up to step 5, it's all about things that are bigger than you. But as you'll notice, personal grief gets intertwined with collective grief. And so even when you're looking at collective grief, it stirs up personal grief that you have maybe not looked at yet. And this step is about checking in with yourself. How is your personal grief affecting this? Is anything being triggered? Really checking in with your mind and body here. 6 is feel my feelings, very similar. And these are the steps where we're really diving into the self and understanding ourself by checking in with ourselves and our shadows and areas where we need work. It helps us see truth more clearly because it helps us recognize gaps in truth and perception.
And this is where our study of Brené Brown and her work comes into play. She talks and writes a lot about how humans have a full range of feelings and we need to feel all of them. We need to feel the heavier emotions in order to feel the full extent of your joy and your happiness and all the ones that we want to feel. And so it goes back to the importance of moving through grief and experiencing it and not getting stuck. Step 6, feeling my feelings, is really an affirmation of life and that we're living and that we're dynamic and that we have this whole range of feelings that we're capable of embodying, but our culture tells us only a select few are okay. And so this is our way of telling you and ourselves that in order to be fully alive, we have to take in the good with the bad and we have to move through the more difficult emotions so that when we feel the lighter emotions, we can feel them bigger and better and more alive. Steps 7 and 8 have to do a lot with self-care. Step 7 is take breaks and rest as needed. If you're an activist, we have this understanding that we must go to every march and every rally, and we have to be completely aware of all things going on at all times. We have to use every platform we can to bring awareness to these issues. And while I think that's true and important, we have downplayed the importance of taking breaks and resting. If you're burned out, you are not going to be the activist or advocate we need you to be. And this world needs people who are engaged and alive and well-rested and have the energy to continue to tackle hard things. So we advocate for people really knowing themselves and really taking care of themselves so that they don't get burned out and turned off when we need them the most. And then step 8, it's evolving constantly. As Amy mentioned, we were looking at this step before we even started recording, and it's because we want to fit a lot of things into the step. So step 8 is develop awareness of brain patterns and perception. We experience a lot of different type of biases, like the availability heuristic, where we tend to overestimate the likelihood of events with greater availability in memory, which can be influenced by how recent the memories are or how unusual or emotionally charged they may be. We have the blind spot biases, We have the confirmation bias. And what we're trying to do is advocate for you exploring them and realizing how they shape your perception and how you engage with the world. But in addition to all of these cognitive biases and understanding how our brain works, we also want to inform people about how meditation and mindfulness and gratitude can also help shape our brain and create new patterns so that we're not always responding with our reptilian part of our brain, the part of the brain that's responsible for the fight, flight, or freeze responses. But when we practice mindfulness or meditation or gratitude, it actively engages our neocortex. And the more we do these kinds of activities, the more we pave a pathway in our brain to respond with our neocortex instead of our reptilian part of our brain. And this is important for being able to problem solve. So Amy has recently had an experience where she learned about the importance of the different type of thinking styles humans have. And remind us what it's called.
In a previous episode, I mentioned the beautiful experience I had at Remuda Ranch. Also, correction, I said it was in Phoenix, Arizona. It is not. It is in Wickenburg, Arizona, which is a couple hours from Phoenix. And there, they were talking about upstairs brain versus downstairs brain, which is a lot of the same work we've already been doing with the reptilian brain and the neocortex. I think using the terms upstairs and downstairs brain just simplifies it, because I think people are sometimes intimidated by talking about the neocortex or the prefrontal lobe or...
The downstairs brain seems to be the quicker response, the less thought about response, the more instinctual type of responses, where the upstairs brain is the more actually rational, slower to form thoughts.
So when I'm in downstairs brain, I am concerned about being right. It is ego-based. I will get angry easier. Whereas when I'm in upstairs brain, I'm more focused on truth rather than being right.
And if we can practice engaging our upstairs brain before making decisions, it allows us to actually create more rational decisions, and we're less persuaded by our biases. And what we're trying to say is that we can train our brains to respond with upstairs brain in a variety of different ways, and we've already mentioned a few of them.
Yes, like meditation and yoga. Oh, and I wanted to clarify that we don't have to think of downstairs brain as bad. It's a natural reaction. But as you begin to train your brain and become more aware of the two ways of thinking, you can start to catch yourself when you're in downstairs brain. And when you're in downstairs brain, that is not the time to have an argument, to try to be rational. And so when you recognize you're not in a headspace to do those things, you can take a break as needed, and do self-care until you're able to come at the conflict or problem or whatever you want to call it with upstairs brain and clarity.
Is it fair to say that downstairs brain has protected us for years and seems to be the evolutionary savior of our species when we have a threat directly behind us?
The fight or flight response is part of the downstairs brain.
And the problem with these big systemic issues is not that the threat is directly behind us, like a predator who's pursuing us. It's an existential problem that seeps in our brains and in our hearts and in our guts. And so we need different tools to be able to engage. The reptilian brain doesn't necessarily serve us well when we're trying to figure out solutions for a complex existential threat.
Steps 9 and 10 are more action-based. Number 9 is show up. And I want to emphasize that this step follows the step about taking breaks and rest as needed, because sometimes showing up means showing up for yourself. So maybe that means you're not going to show up to a march that day because you need self-care, and that's still showing up. And that being said, we can forget the importance of showing up sometimes. I know occasionally I'll think, it doesn't really matter if I go to this protest or march, and everybody does count in that situation.
Step 9 also means showing up and living with integrity. It is being a model for how you want to lead your life. You know, are you consuming beef? Are you eating dairy? Are you driving everywhere? Are you flying everywhere? Are you buying things because you can buy them? Are you buying things because you're told to buy them? Showing up has a wide range of meanings in this particular step. And so it doesn't just mean showing up for your community, although it does mean that. And it doesn't just mean showing up for yourself, although it means that too. It means fully embodying who you want to be in this time and place.
And 10 is reinvest into problem-solving efforts. This step is vague for a reason, and that is because we believe each individual has their own special talents or abilities, and that we are most effective as activists when we honor our uniqueness and what makes us a light in this world. It's important to play to your strengths. Every individual has their own strengths, and hopefully through working these steps, as you develop more self-awareness, you can really lean into those strengths and use your skills for the good of everyone.
Buckminster Fuller is famous for saying, "You never change things by fighting the existing reality. To change something, build a new model that makes the existing model obsolete." And that ultimately is our goal of these steps. And as Amy mentioned, it is through doing all of this external work and internal work that we can really start to chip away at the social constructions that we've either been fed or self-reinforced, and we can actually figure out what skills we have and how to come alive in this time and place and be effective. The Good Grief Network doesn't want to tell you what your best skills are. We want you to be able to figure it out and intuit it and put those skills and practice into the world, because we need it. We need people. And Amy and I have skills, but our skills are limited because we're human beings and we only have a certain skill set each. And so what we need is for you to come alive and to come awake and to use your contributions in a way that's positive and meaningful for not only you in this lifetime, but the planet as a whole.
And we get questions a lot about what is our group doing to take action and what do we recommend for taking action. And we do believe in playing to your individual strength. And so our overall goal is to have resources. So if you're interested in being a frontline activist and going out and getting arrested, we can connect you to a group we know that we trust what they're doing. And if you're interested in food issues and fairness around food and nutrition, we can point you in a group for that that's doing it. If you're interested in writing, we can point you that direction. We really believe in the strength of the individual who knows their strength.
Well, and we believe in the power of community. We no longer have to be experts in every domain to be engaged and thoughtful. Amy and I don't have to have all the answers, but if we can lead you in the direction that provides more fulfilling answers or connect you with the right people or organizations doing the work that you want to be doing, then we have fulfilled part of our mission. We want to be connectors. We want to provide resources. We want to build community and say that you're not alone and you're not the only one experiencing these things and these feelings, and you don't have to witness the world being on fire by yourself. We're here too, and we're trying to make connections and build you up, build ourselves up, build our community up so that we can continue to co-create the world that we all want to live in. And much like the steps in AA or Al-Anon, these ones are meant to be repeated over and over again, because every time we get to the steps again, we're a different person. We have new information. We have new perspectives. And so the idea is that each of our communities with this manual can start a program, and we know maybe every Tuesday night there will be a Good Grief step meeting we can go to.
Thanks for listening to today's preview of our manual. We'll be working hard in the coming weeks to get that out for you. If you like what you hear, you can follow us on iTunes. If you're feeling generous, please leave a review and comments. And you can subscribe so it will alert you weekly when we release our podcasts. Also, again, special thanks to our patrons. If you're interested in becoming a patron, we have the link below. You can choose to donate anywhere from $1 or more. And the patrons are helping us contribute to our bills so that we can afford to spend time on Good Grief rather than working a 9-to-5 right now. And for that, we are incredibly grateful and hope that our work benefits others. And money is not the only way to support us. If you're interested in what we're doing and are not in a place to donate financially, trust me, we understand. And if you could just help us spread the word about what we're doing and share the podcast on your social media pages. And most importantly, have these conversations with your friends, family, and community. If you have any questions you'd like to ask us that we might answer on the show, send us an email at goodgriever@gmail.com.
Thank you for listening to Why, a Good Grief Network podcast with your hosts, Amy Lewis-Rowe and Laura Schmidt. If you like what you hear, consider subscribing, commenting, leaving feedback, or just checking out our Patreon page. We'll come back at you next week with some more information and some more big questions. Thank you for listening.